The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Wednesday's Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. It's the 18th of March, 6 minutes past nine. I hope you had a great St. Patrick's Day yesterday. I had one of those sneaky four-day weekends, you know, where you take one day and you'll leave and you get a nice little break. It was fantastic, and yesterday, as I said, to Lee just before 9 o'clock. Fantastic to be out and about and have the health to do so on St. Patrick's Day. And so much effort put into all the festivities yesterday. As Lee quite rightly pointed out, the organisers and participants and all that type of stuff. So it was a good day. So I hope you were out and about and you enjoyed it. The weather wasn't fantastic, but we don't let that bother us, do we? And it looks like we're going to get a bit of milder, calmer weather. We'll talk about that a little later on, but it'll be very welcome, wouldn't it? All right, now the lines are open for you. If there's anything that you want, and thanks to Donna Marie Doherty, of course, who stood in for me on Monday, did a great job as always. So if you want to get in touch with today's show, the lines are open for you right now. Caroline Orr, our researcher and producer in residence, is taking your calls and comments, of course, assisted by Katie Gillen today. You can give us a call on 07491 25000. We get lots and lots of calls to this show. People still like to communicate with us that way, especially on matters of a personal nature. You want that connection, and that's what we're here to do. But you can also WhatsApp and text as well, 086 60 25000. More than happy to get your correspondence that way. And if email is your thing, email comments@highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, if you listen to the podcast, as thousands of you do every week, and really appreciate that, or if you listen to us overnight, another loyal band of listeners, we do appreciate you as well. Feel free to text or to email, and we can pick up your comments and carry them through to the next live show. The Finn Valley Voice is out today. Their front page story, Twin Towns Library wins major book award. The Twin Towns Library has been recognised on the international stage after winning the Island of Ireland Regional and Country Winner of Library of the Year at the British Book Awards. Big achievement. The award honours the library's groundbreaking Francis Brown Storyteller Seen Beyond Sight project. This was developed through Twin Towns Library to celebrate the legacy of the Stranorlar-born writer while creating opportunities for blind and visually impaired writers to share their work. Let's go to the Nationals now. And Micheál Martin was busy yesterday. He was in an audience with Donald Trump. It's a tightrope that you have to walk because, you know, you don't want to seem to be sitting there on your hands saying nothing, but at the same time, you don't want to upset the big guy, do you? Let's see what the newspapers make of it. Taoiseach Micheál Martin came to the defence of British Prime Minister Keir Starmer during a St. Patrick's Day meeting at the White House that was dominated by US President Donald Trump, as you can imagine. Despite references to the strength of the Irish-American relationship, the US President was preoccupied with the lack of support from NATO allies. Mr. Martin avoided any clashes with Mr. Trump during the meeting in the Oval Office, but his diplomatic skills were tested as Irish political allegiances were put under the spotlight. Mr. Trump said he was disappointed with Mr. Starmer, who he said was a nice man, but one who doesn't produce. He added that the request for NATO support in keeping the Strait of Hormuz open was a great test because we didn't need them, but they should have been there, which is interesting because, you know, this was Israel primarily and America's doing. They decided that they were going to go in, and I think they've made the same mistake as the Russians made with Ukraine. They thought they were going to go in, let off a few bombs and then claim victory, bish bash bosh. Clearly that wasn't the case. The Iranians were heavily prepared for this. It seems Israel was going to go in against Iran, whether or not they had the backing of the US outright. The United States, for right or wrong, many feel wrong, were afraid that they could have been dragged into something without preparation. And Donald Trump, the president of peace, was pretty much coerced into having to go in to do what he wanted to do, or to do what Israel wanted to do, I should say. Now, he's a willing participant. He's made the decision. But they've got themselves involved in something that's very, very difficult to extract themselves from. How do you define a victory? What is a victory? They keep talking about the Iranians wanting to speak with them, but the Iranians are saying, no, we're not finished yet. Keep coming. We've got plenty in reserve. And they tactically you know, have got it spot on. This is not in any way to praise them, because we're all feeling the ramifications of it. They've attacked the Middle East, the likes of Dubai. We're not hearing from Dubai anymore now, because if you post a video about a missile hitting an apartment block in Dubai now, you can face 2 years in jail. You know, it is a very, very strict country, and it's not just Dubai. The other nations over there are the same. But the likes of Dubai had this reputation of being this wonderful, you know, beautiful, safe place. And it was, you know, many people can attest to that. But that was when there wasn't conflict in the Middle East. And now what they've done is the Iranians, with a few 20,000 euro drones and a few missiles, have taken that security and that safety away from the likes of Dubai. And without that, Dubai is kind of, you know, somewhat heartless. What else? What is there if it isn't this, you know, glorious lifestyle with beautiful weather and a very safe environment? And that's going to be very hard to get back. And they're going to see a lot of people moving out of Dubai, because you never know when it's going to happen. But of course, also, Iran has its hand on the tap of oil, effectively. And if the Americans could keep this strait open, it would be open. And it's just interesting now that Donald Trump has spent, you know, two terms criticizing NATO, saying NATO's not this, NATO's not that, we're pulling out of NATO because they don't pay enough and blah, 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 blah. And yet he goes in at the whim of Israel, effectively, into Iran. And now all of a sudden he's saying, well, where's NATO? Where's my buddies in NATO? It's a peculiar one. Making headlines as well in the St. Patrick's Day theme is President Catherine Connolly. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. President Catherine Connolly has been criticised for failing to use the word saint four times when referencing St. Patrick in her maiden speech marking Ireland's national holiday. I don't know the ins and outs of why this might be the case, but I think to not use the word saint when talking of St. Patrick, that's a decision you have to make. It's not you're making a point, right? It's not just like an oversight. You are making a point to not use that word for whatever reason that might be. But, you know, it's not something that you accidentally don't do four times. Well, the speech was viewed millions of times on social media and was criticised by some at home and abroad. Father P.J. Hughes of Drumard Parish in Longford claimed that too many public figures fail to see our real culture and are disrespectful to St. Patrick's story, he told the Irish Daily Mail. It's always referred to as St. Patrick. That is out of respect for those in the faith. If you want to know anything about St. Patrick, we believe his confession, the Confessio, where he recorded his faith in God and how God brought him here and helped him through every situation. It is in the confessions that the people did abuse him when he spoke and that he was challenged, so nothing has changed. There's more quotes from Father Hughes there. I didn't actually hear in full her speech. I just don't understand why the word saint was dropped. Even sometimes when St. Vincent de Paul, it's referred to as de Paul in some parlours, and I don't understand if that's the charity itself or if that's an editorial decision that's made. Is St. Vincent de Paul not St. Vincent de Paul now? Is it just de Paul? I wouldn't be comfortable referencing it as de Paul unless they said, listen, that's our name and you must do so. I don't know. But to drop the saint for St. Patrick when you're talking about St. Patrick on St. Patrick's Day is a little bit peculiar to me, to be honest with you. Vapes and fires. An interesting one on the front of the Irish Times. Fires in bin lorries and waste sorting centres cost at least 100 million euro in the last 3 years, and the waste industry believes vapes are largely to blame. The Irish Waste Management Association said the true cost was probably considerably higher as companies are seeing insurance premiums spiral. Fires in sorting facilities cost 56.6 million euro from 2023 to 2025, and two of the damaged plants remain out of action. A further 1.7 million was lost in damage to vehicles, according to an association survey in which two-thirds of its 37 members' firms replied. Maybe you are working in that space in County Donegal and you can talk to us about that. Have you had situations with vapes causing fires? But you see, some people dump batteries as well into their general waste, and I presume the same potential for fire. It's just an interesting thing. So maybe if you work in waste and you've got some experience of this, whether it's vapes or regular batteries or what have you, maybe there's some public advice we can get out there. Get in contact with us. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or call 074 91 25 000. There's an ongoing court case in Britain at the moment involving Gerry Adams. And Gerry Adams has told a court that he had no involvement whatsoever in provisional IRA bombings in England and that he was never part of the organisation, which is something he's said on the record for quite some time now. Mr Adams gave evidence yesterday defending a civil case brought against him by three victims of bombings by the provisional IRA. John Clark, a victim of the 1973 Old Bailey bombing in London. Jonathan Ganesh, and that was a bomb in London Docklands. And Barry Laycock, a victim of the 1996 Arndale shopping centre bombing in Manchester. All allege that Mr Adams was a leading member of the provisional IRA on these dates, including of its army council. They're seeking damages it's £1 in damages, so obviously it's not about money. They are seeking £1 in damages. The former Sinn Féin president denies the allegations, but that case is ongoing there. And sad news from the world of music. Dolores Keane, she passed away since we've been on air. Dolores Keane's home county is to open a book of condolence in her honour. This following the death of the renowned folk singer on Monday. The Kirloch of Galway County Council Councillor David Collins will open the book, which will be available for signing during normal office hours in the coming days. Ms Keane, who was just 72 and a native of County Galway, was regarded as one of the most influential voices in Irish traditional and folk music. And I think we can all agree. She has that voice that if you hear her on a track, even if it's part of an ensemble, which often it was, you know her voice instantly. And at just 72, she had an awful lot more to offer, I am sure. So sad to hear that news over the weekend. You know, into St. Patrick's Day. I know it was Monday and not the weekend as such. Right, by the way, I note on our social media that the crew from Highland Radio are well advanced because Highland Radio is going to America. And this Friday and Saturday, there'll be a series of broadcasts from Philadelphia, United States of America. The Donegal Diaspora Initiative is bringing together business and community leaders with the aim to strengthen Donegal's connections on a global scale through business, sport and culture. Now, as part of the inaugural event, Highland Radio is live from 7:05 this Friday, so just after the 7 o'clock news, at the Springfield Country Club, celebrating transatlantic enterprise at the Donegal Philadelphia Business Forum. Then on Saturday afternoon, 4 p.m. our time, we'll be speaking with Donegal Gaels, who've made their way to Philly for the Gaelic football tournament, where the winner will lift the inaugural Charlie McIlwee Cup. So Oisin Kelly's over there, Brendan Devaney's over there, and some of the Highland crew. So listen on Friday and on Saturday. On Friday, it's 7:05 p.m. And on Saturday afternoon, it's 4 p.m., which is great, isn't it? It's nice. I think it's always nice to go out and connect with Donegal people where they are now. I've always been a fan of that myself, rather than talking about them over here or expecting them to come to us. So hopefully it's a safe trip and interesting radio. We can now go to the United States to Peter Kelly, special correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Peter, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Good morning, Greg. Good to talk to you from Washington.
Now, Taoiseach Micheál Martin and US President Donald Trump came face to face in the White House yesterday. Micheál Martin, I suppose, a tightrope of sorts he had to walk. How do you think he did? How do you assess that meeting?
Yeah, a tightrope over some thin ice, you might say, to mix metaphors. The consensus among the press corps here in Washington was that he did well for the second time. This happened last year as well in the Oval Office. Last year was more turbulent, but this was still testy this time. And going into the Oval Office with Donald Trump is always unpredictable. It's unpredictable waters, uncharted waters in a sense. So he had to go in there with a specific message to strengthen and emphasize the economic partnership between Ireland and the United States, to build on the cultural and family ties, historic ties. But the financial relationship was stressed at all times. The fact that it's a $1 trillion transatlantic relationship, under 1,000 US firms have entities in Ireland. Ireland invests in the US as well, $400 billion, and employs about 125,000 employees in America from Irish firms too. So there was a strong emphasis on that symbiotic economic relationship to show that the two countries are allies and build on the family and cultural and historical ties that already existed. So it came out well. It was a challenging meeting. The press in the Oval Office, when we were all in the White House, there was big emphasis, of course, on the Iran war as well. The Taoiseach was sitting in that Oval Office meeting with a strong and robust media that were screaming, shouting for his attention, for both of the principal's attention, the president and the Taoiseach, and he came out of it, I'm sure, feeling very happy.
Yeah, because to some extent, Donald Trump won't always be in situ, and there is an element of keeping the tradition and the relationship ticking over, I presume, until such time as someone else is in that seat.
There is, and we know who that's going to be. It's likely to be J.D. Vance. And before the Taoiseach went into the Oval Office, he had the breakfast meeting with the Vice President as well. Vice President has ties with Ireland also, and is equally enthusiastic about all things Irish too, which is very handy, very strategically useful. Last year, J.D. Vance wore shamrock socks. So there's great affection, not just from the American population, but from the upper echelons of American power, which the Irish delegation here in Washington that's headed up by the US Embassy here and Ambassador Byrne Nason and a big team on the East Coast, they're able to maintain those strong ties. The Taoiseach comes over every March. Everything is planned to the absolute minutiae of everything. And it's mission accomplished, I think, this year, just like last year.
Yeah, and interesting as you referenced how strongly Micheál Martin, strongly, I suppose, in the context of the meeting, how strongly he went to bat for Keir Starmer, our closest and nearest ally, I suppose you could say.
Yes, who would have thought that an Irish Prime Minister, Irish Taoiseach, was advocating for a British Prime Minister in the Oval Office with the US President? Mm. Who would have thought? But actually, it's kind of personal to Micheál Martin, because just before he arrived in Washington, he was in Cork with the British Prime Minister, and in fact flew from Cork. The Taoiseach flew from Cork on the new government jet, a 53 million euro jet, on its maiden voyage across the Atlantic to the US. So the economic argument as well, I suppose, featured there too, because the ties between Ireland and the UK are very important economically, culturally, historically, as well as with the US. So in a sense, Micheál Martin's the bridge. Ireland's the bridge between the US and the EU. But I think the Taoiseach was able to score a success there in keeping both of these political leaders on side, and there was pushback from Micheál Martin, as you mentioned there, quite unusual. We didn't have that last year, but there was more self-assured pushback in the Oval, as they say, this year. But he did it gently, and there was actually quite a lot of cordial mutual respect between the Donald Trump and Micheál Martin. So it avoided any issues, and he was able to pull it off.
Obviously, in the past, last year, and years before that, the situation in Ukraine was very much to the fore. Now we've a whole new set of global problems in the Middle East. What was the coverage of that, in the sense of that in the conversation?
Well, the meeting in the Oval Office was about 40 minutes long, and the Taoiseach's interaction really only lasted about 10 minutes. Yeah. He was able to interject now and again in the midst of the media scrum around the sofa in the centre of the room, interject to offer analysis of how peace is important, that Ireland stands for reconciliation with our own example in Northern Ireland, of course, of the Troubles. He mentioned that to Trump. He didn't openly criticise the president. He's very strategically wise not to do that. It would be counterproductive anyway. But offered the Irish example that if Ireland can come to peace after decades of war and can offer conflict resolution examples, then surely the rest of the world can. So that's part of the identity of Ireland and part of its brand Ireland here in the United States as a peaceful nation after the conflict. So he was able to interject in the Oval Office with the many press, not just the Irish media, but many press that were very vocal in trying to get extra information from the president. And Micheál Martin was able to offer wise counsel and be a calm among the storm.
Just briefly and finally, Peter, what is the sense in the United States since you've been there to the conflict in the Middle East? You know, Donald Trump obviously has some big elections coming up soon. He's labelled himself as the president of peace. He's got himself into a situation, and I don't want to sound like an armchair general here, but he's got himself into a situation that it seems it's going to be very difficult for him to extract himself from and to be able to declare some sort of a victory. You get a sense of maybe those in the media over there or the general population as to what they think's going on, what level of support, or even if they understand what he is trying to achieve.
Absolutely. He often keeps an eye on his own base, of course, the Make America Great Again base. And I think the economic implications of the oil blockade around the Straits of Hormuz and other places like that will make a big toll on his strategic endeavours in the Middle East, whether he pulls back or whether it comes to an agreement or installs a new government in or friendly government in Tehran is yet to be seen. But a lot of confusion over here about the methods of the war, the end game of the war, what's going to happen afterwards. There's still the ghost of Iraq and the ghost of what happened with George W. Bush's mistake and, of course, affiliated with Tony Blair, etc. That's perhaps going to haunt this current endeavour in the Middle East. So there's a lot of it's up in the air. There's questions about whether it's wise, what's going to happen. Of course, certain media will back it, hawk over dove, but people are really looking on the ground and watching the gasoline prices here, which will impact a lot. So it's a very moving situation. We'll wait and see what happens, and fingers crossed. But Micheál Martin coming over here was a calm amongst the storm, and will be pleased with his performance. He's back probably in Ireland now on the government jet, and heading to the EU for business in Brussels. So came here at a turbulent time, but I think it was mission accomplished.
Yeah, and as much as could be achieved. Okay, listen, Peter, thank you very much for your time. That is Peter Kelly, who's special correspondent with the Irish Examiner, speaking to us live there from Washington, D.C., in the United States of America, and just watching on to American politics, as I would tend to, not just America, but around the globe. It's interesting that rather than a very high-profile sort of pro-Israeli character in Ben Shapiro, Donald Trump has lost an awful lot of his supporters, your Megyn Kellys, your Candace Owens, your Tucker Carlson's, all very... There's a real anti-Israel rhetoric in the movement, the influencer movement that got him elected or helped get him elected in the first place. A caller says that the Taoiseach was in the White House defending Keir Starmer, but Starmer is one of the most hated prime ministers ever. He will get voted out at the next general election. People will vote for Jeremy Corbyn instead. I don't know. Jeremy Corbyn, obviously, in and of himself is a popular character, but this party and the different views within that party, I'm not really sure he's going to get... look out for the likes of Reform. That's where the danger lies in for Labour. It's certainly, I don't believe, Jeremy Corbyn and his group. On the issue of President Connolly and her comments yesterday, everyone around the world wore green on St. Patrick's Day and our own president wore black. Can her people explain that decision? Very disrespectful to her own country. Another, very disappointed that the president didn't wear green when making her speech, and her lack of courtesy in not using the word saint was really has really put me off her. And I'm interested in your views for and against in relation to this, because Catherine Connolly, very popular up here, some really high-profile backers, and they really went to bat for her. Maybe this is no big deal. I'm not trying to make it into a big deal, but it just is kind of... Quick asks a listener, is there a bus from Donegal gets you into Galway before 10 a.m? Quick? I don't know. You're certainly not going to get in before 10 a.m. now. Why would you be going to Galway? Is there a point in that, Caroline, that I'm missing, or is it just a general query? I'm trying to think. Maybe it's a general query. Back to the Taoiseach's visit. I want to ask the Taoiseach to stop writing checks for the Ukraine war. It's clear 4 years in that Russia is winning. People from Ukraine are boasting about free rent and accommodation. It's just a lost cause at this stage. Well, this comment is 6 months old, maybe a year old, it feels, in terms of, you know, free rent and accommodation. There's been big changes in this country in how people are housed. I'm not contradicting you. I'm just saying it's not quite the way it used to be. And I do take your point, and there are still monthly allowances, etc. But, I mean, you also have to consider, if Russia is successful ultimately in Ukraine, where does it go next? It would feel that it can go into other countries neighbouring Ukraine. It's not going to stop there. So, you know, we're heading to something big. It's just dependent on where we are at when it happens. It's inevitable. Melissa McGettigan, spokesperson for McGettigan Travel in Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Melissa.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Now, I mean, we're all feeling the pinch, aren't we? You know, you're driving past, I'm driving past every forecourt looking at prices and, you know, wondering if I go another 20 kilometres, might I save 3 or 4 cents? Everything's over €2 in terms of diesel nowadays. And that's me and other people looking at it on a very personal basis. But from a business perspective, from a McGettigan Travel perspective, every cent this goes up eats into your input, your running costs. What's the impact for you guys, Melissa, and those in the industry, of course?
Well, 100%. Like, to the general public, you know, you're seeing it going up a few cents at the pump, whereas we're seeing, you know, multiply, these cents are multiplying thousands of overheads every, you know, there's just, it just seems to be no end at the minute. Everything's kind of going out and, you know, not a lot's coming in, and whatever is coming in is going straight back out again to the diesel. And, you know, we are paying the full price at the pump as well, because we're VAT exempt. So, you know, it's just, it's no good.
Yeah, that's something that people don't realise about the VAT exemption. Another, speaking to people in the industry, Melissa, last week or the week before, you know, for people who were getting diesel delivered to site, you know, who pump up in their base, I think they were being quoted 2.12, 2.14, when the price at the actual pump was just marginally under €2. So even buying in bulk and getting it delivered, I'm not sure how you do it, but there's not necessarily a saving there at all.
There's no saving whatsoever. It's just hiking. And, you know, as a bus company, like, every time there is a price hike, we seem to suffer the most because there's no protection for us. You know, the government just expects us to take the brunt and pull ourselves out of the hole.
Yeah. And when you tender or when companies tender for contracts, you know, there could be a year or 5 year, you have to factor an awful lot in there. But you're also competing with others, right? So the temptation is there, obviously, just to try and take as much meat off the bone as you can. Presumably then, when you see such drastic and unpredictable hikes like we're seeing now, that puts big pressure on that tender.
Oh, 100%. But I mean, we can't change the price of tenders the way the petrol stations change overnight. You know, we have to stay at the price we were tendered on the contract, which is, you know, it's not fair, but as I say, you know, every time there is a price hike, the bus companies do seem to suffer. There's no protection for us. There's no, you know, we do get the diesel rebate back every quarter, but that's 7.5 cent, you know, back per litre. It's not enough. It's generally not enough.
Yeah, and you have to buy in bulk for that to qualify for that as well. So what does the government need to do then? I mean, an uplift in the contracts, right? So maybe they track the price of petrol or diesel, or concessions in terms of, you know, being able to claim back VAT or what? What would work for the industry, do you think?
Well, I mean, the high price of the fuel isn't even the fuel itself. It's down to the taxes and levies the government has on it. You know, the government has the power to hit pause and give us some breathing room at the minute, and they're not listening. You know, in Donegal especially, like, we don't have a railway network. We have limited public transport. I mean, even at the start of the year, the Letterkenny Town bus service was ceased. Now, there is talks for a TFI local link for later in the year. There's no date given for that. You know, in Donegal, we're very isolated. If the wheels don't turn, you know, our county stops.
Donald Trump said yesterday that when the situation in Iran settles down, that petrol and diesel prices will drop like a rock. I'm not quite sure about that. This could be around for quite some time. Presumably, you know, companies will not continue necessarily to run vital school transport or local link services at a loss.
Yeah, well, I mean, the prices went up before the fuel, you know, the prices went up straight away before the fuel even went up itself, if you know what I mean. So Ireland is a greedy country, definitely is greedy. I don't know. It's just not on.
But it sounds to me like something needs to be done sooner rather than later. And I think that the issue, one of the issues I've found with the bus services, is it's not as organised in terms of campaigning as, say, for instance, the lorry drivers are. And that's not a criticism of anyone. It's just the fact that I suppose there's a lot of competition in there. There isn't necessarily an overarching group to represent everyone. And sometimes I think that can work into the government's advantage, right? So we've got your voice and maybe another soul voice, whereas the hauliers have an organisation that can lobby and put pressure on. Do you think that's part of the problem? It's that you can't make enough noise to get action?
I think so. I think, you know, it's kind of shocking me at the minute because we are bus companies and there isn't a lot of noise about the diesel, you know, the diesel prices. You know, I think if somebody beats the drum, maybe somebody else might start beating the drum, you know, making a bit of noise. That's what we need. I mean, Ireland is an expensive country at the best of times, and even for the likes of tours,
yeah,
like it's an expensive destination. So for tour groups, if we hike our prices up, they're going to go elsewhere. So it's not going to benefit us in the long run. If we make some noise now, maybe something might happen to kind of give us a wee bit of leeway and give us a wee bit of help.
Yeah, because the government often says, look what we're investing in rural transport here, there and everywhere. That doesn't all happen by accident. It's been, for the most part, for a great deal of the time provided by private operators. You know, so if you're going to praise these operators, you're going to have to support them too when times are tough.
Yeah, and even, you know, even going back to the VAT exemption, you know, for bus companies, that was brought in 1978 when the price of diesel was 27 cent per litre. I mean, it's gone up now to €2.12 per litre. The government needs to roll with the times. Like,
and is that because the VAT can't be claimed back on diesel, or is that the way companies have to be structured to tender?
I think with the exemption is they're trying to keep the price of the bus fares down for the consumers, but yet the diesel prices has gone up, so they're kind of screwing us from all ends, if you know what I mean.
Okay, and of course, too, this is where local politicians have to step up as well. That's part of their function, I think, especially with groups that aren't necessarily, you know, very well, that don't have an overarching representative group. All right, Melissa, thanks very much for giving us a better understanding of that. That's Melissa McGettigan, a spokesperson for McGettigan Travel in Letterkenny. If you're in that industry or any other industry that's being affected by these rising costs, please get in touch with us. We'd be very happy to platform your point of view. We were talking to a spokesperson from McGettigan Travel about their input costs, the price of diesel in their case, when companies tender for a run. Sometimes it's for a year, sometimes it's for 5 years. They have to try and be competitive. They have to try and win it, but they have to try and factor in what they can factor in, i.e. petrol and diesel prices. There's always going to be a lift, but you can't factor in an instant jump like we've seen since Israel and the United States went in to Iran. Well, let's see what the situation is for inshore fishermen. Kevin Burns, a member of the National Inshore Fishermen's Association, and he joins me now. Kevin, thank you for holding there. What's the situation for you guys?
Hi, good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on here. Probably regarding NIFA, just to give you a bit of a back info on the group, is that the NIFA represent between 800 and 1,000 inshore fishermen. And at the minute, we have probably up on 400 members signed up around the coast, which we represent members all around the coast. And for inshore fishing vessels at the minute, or any fishing vessel that leaves a pier anywhere along the coast, the biggest overhead is fuel at the minute. And that fuel, this last 3 weeks, has doubled in price. Like,
primarily diesel, if not exclusively, is that right?
The bigger vessels would primarily operate on diesel, yeah, MGO, marine gas oil. And then the smaller inshore vessels that operate closer to the coastline during the summer months in the better weather would operate on petrol as well. So then, yeah.
Yeah, I get you. It depends on the size of the vessel as well. And just for those who hear words like inshore fishermen, I want to get back to the price of fuel in a moment. But what are they doing? So what activity are you covering there? I presume lobsters, etc. Talk to me about some of the membership.
Inshore vessels probably fall into the category, Greg, of under 15 metres is what we would be categorised. So that's a vessel anything from 15 metres down as far as your 6-metre punt that's operating in the summer months. The main fisheries for the inshore fisheries at the minute, because we've sort of been pigeonholed into an area where it's mainly shellfish at the minute. Now, there is some gillnet fisheries around the coast still and some hook and line fisheries. But mainly, when we say inshore fishing vessels at the minute, you're looking at boats that are operating pots mainly.
Crabs and lobsters, that kind of stuff. Crustaceans.
Crabs, lobsters, shrimp, yeah.
Right, so what kind of an increase in fuel costs have you guys seen in the last couple of weeks?
Well, the fuel would have went from about 80 cents a litre there, retail price for a vessel, and at the minute it's up close to €2, 1.87, €2 a litre, like, for vessels. And probably just to give a bit of back history as well, Greg, is that, you know, these conflicts in the world, I suppose the sad thing about it is there's people dying in them and whatnot, and our situation is that we're feeling the effect of it on a fuel crisis as such. But the previous we would have had with the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, or the war, is that at that period of time, probably over 4 years ago, the government at that time were assessing the situation on a basis where they were assessing the crisis, the fuel crisis. So they assessed it basically until the situation sorted itself out. Mm. And our fear at the minute is that, at the minute, that's the sort of wording we're hearing from government at the minute, is that they're assessing the situation, they're looking at it, and they're going to see what happens. So if they would be honest and say, well, you know what, we're going to do nothing, in the meantime, tell us that and we'll deal with it. But don't be telling us that they're going to assess it and do something and then not do it.
Yeah, I'm sure your members feel squeezed every which way in terms of where you can fish, what you can fish for, and now this extra squeeze too. And I presume that whether it's happening immediately or down the line, for the guys that are exporting as well, you know, are we going to see a slowdown in demand, you know, if you're exporting your product to mainland Europe, for an example, you know, so you could end up it costing much more to go out and fish for a product that might fall in price or that might be less demand for. You just never know which way markets could switch.
Yeah, well, the main market is the European continent for the shellfish, Greg, and I suppose probably when we mention the European is that other European fishing countries, the nations like Portugal, Spain, France, the Netherlands, Belgium, all the way up as far as Denmark. Previously, if there's any disruptions on their end of it, fishing-wise, their governments are through the EU are very quick to act, whereas it seems to be very slow and methodical here in Ireland, that we always seem to be last in line. And I'll just probably give a few examples there, even recently, like, and it wasn't probably a war situation, but Portuguese fishermen were compensated for weather disruptions last winter. Like, and I mean, anybody living on the west coast of Ireland would tell you that, well, we get that every year.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we have disruptions here on an annual basis, but the chances of getting anything for it is slim and none.
Yeah. So just to back to what kind of supports might be needed, if you were sort of paying 80 cent a litre and it's heading towards 2 cent a litre, sorry, 28, double that now, €2 per litre, presumably excise and stuff, there's already breaks in relation to that. So how might the government help to cushion this fuel blow for your members?
I think for everybody, Greg, I suppose everybody understands that there has to be excise and duty on fuel. But I mean, it could very easily in the morning do some sort of a rebate or a subsidy for a period of time. I mean, nobody's looking for it forever. Set a price at a ceiling and say, well, if it's above that at the minute, this is what we're going to do for you to soften the blow. And when the price comes back down below that ceiling again, the subsidy or a rebate, that can go back to what it was previously. I mean, nobody's looking for something for nothing forevermore. But when people need help at the minute, for the time that's needed, it should be given.
And I'm not trying to pitch one group of people against another, but there would be a sense maybe in the inshore fishing industry, I presume, or the fishing industry generally, that you have to, you know, plough your own course an awful lot, say, for instance, compared to the farming community, that often we can sort of see supports for the farming industry kick in quicker than we might for the fishing industry.
Yeah, well, not to disagree with you there, Greg, but NIFA would have found now, working all around the coast, is that most inshore fishing members are actually part members of the farming community as well. So there's a big crossover there. So both are starting to work hand in hand there. And probably, I suppose, the good news the week it was with La Fela Padraic is that the Trucking Association will be meeting the minister, I think it's tomorrow, Thursday, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So I suppose everybody will be watching that meeting and see what comes out of that, because in fairness to the Trucking Association, they're feeling it at the minute. There's nobody in the country that's not feeling it, but the one association at the minute that'll probably have a big clout with the government is the Trucking Association. So it'll be interesting to see tomorrow how they get on with their meeting.
Kevin, thanks for your time. Kevin Byrne there, who's a member of the National Inshore Fishermen's Association, another group of individuals that are feeling the heat at the moment. On the issue of St. Patrick, the Mayor of New York, Manda Mee, made a genuine class speech about St. Patrick and how he praised the Irish immigrants, their contribution to the United States of America and all their hardship when they arrived. It's simple. Catherine Connolly's a communist and a heathen. Well, it's a bit of a stretch and not very respectful, but anyway. Another, our president needs a history lesson about St. Patrick, which she couldn't say saint, and he was an immigrant. Is she rewriting history? We laughed our heads off watching it and had to change station. That's what we're paying a TV license for. This country is finished, they say. So she did reference St. Patrick's Day, but then went on to talk of Patrick just as Patrick. Now, I'm not sure of the rights and wrongs of it. So she goes on, as we gather today to celebrate St. Patrick's, it's appropriate that we recall the foundation story upon which our national day is based. And from then on in, she just refers to him as Patrick. Patrick was trafficked across the Irish Sea from Britain. The story of Patrick's life serves as a reminder. Patrick's story speaks not only to the Ireland of the 5th century. As we recall the life of Patrick, we invoke his spirit. So I don't know. Patrick's story invites us to respond with hospitality and kindness. So the reference was there to his history. It's just strangely that, but maybe it's not strange, that she didn't refer to him as Saint Patrick. Again, it seems to have bothered quite a few of you, but not millions either. So maybe it's a storm in a teacup. Now, before we are joined by our next guest, very exciting. The €10,000 home makeover plus €10,000 cash draw is live and active right now. And it's getting even more exciting because from next Monday through to Friday, we've got €1,000 to give away every single day as part of this great draw. So we're going to give £1,000 away on this show and then, of course, £1,000 on other shows between 7 and 7. So what is up for grabs? €10,000 to spend in association with Foy's. You've got €10,000 to spend in their stores. We also have €10,000 in cash to give you. So the winner's going to get a prize worth a minimum of €20,000 there. But also, just to sweeten the deal, €1,000 cash every single day next week. So that works out as 6 chances to win. It's the usual format. You can go onto our website and get your tickets. By the way, if you've already got your ticket, you're in all of those draws. Just because you bought your ticket early, it doesn't mean now that you're excluded. If you bought your ticket, you're in all of those draws. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, and click through there to buy your ticket. The tickets are €15 for one, which is fine if that's what you want to do. But if you want to maybe splash out yourself or indeed group in with other people, you can get 5 tickets for 50. So that means they're effectively a tenner. So the main draw takes place live and around the Northwest on April 2nd. So that's not too far away. It's the 18th of March now. So between now and then, we have effectively 25 grand to give away, €10,000 to do up your home with Foy's, €10,000 in cash, and then the option to win a grand in cash every day next week. Now, if you want to give us a call, we can sort you out with a ticket over the phone as well. Just give us a call on 07491 25000. We'll make sure you're in the draw. Or you can call into us here at the Mountaintop, Letterkenny, if that suits you better. Just to remind you, there's not three rings, four rings, five rings. You buy your ticket, you've won. So if you're working in a funeral parlour and you're afraid that you won't be able to answer the phone to win, don't worry about that. Your name's associated with your number. So when your number comes out, you've won. And we'll let you know. It's lovely to chat to you, but it doesn't suit everyone, and that's fine too. So get your tickets nice and early. If you're going to enter, you might as well enter early, because there's no, well, there is plenty of point. But, you know, you want to be in all six draws effectively. So five draws for a grand, and then there is one draw then for 20 grand. 10,000 to spend at Foy's, €10,000 in cash. Be a great lift as we head into the summer, and we're going to get a sort of a sense of what the summer might be like, hopefully, over the next couple of days, as it's a bit drier and more settled, and it's going to go that way into the weekend as well too. Like, it's not going to be glorious at the weekend, but it's going to be nicer than what we experienced yesterday, for an example. Right, so call us on 07491 25000. We'll get your tickets sorted, or go on the website highlandradio.com, but get in early. And as I said to Corinne last week, you know, this isn't one of these massive competitions that you see where hundreds of thousands of people enter. It's not like that at all. In fact, your chances of winning a competition like this are much greater than a really quite small amount of cash on the lotto, for an example, such as the level of people that enter versus the number of winners. It's simple maths, right? And up until now, though it's not exclusive to people who've done a goal, up until now, with all of these draws, I've only ever seen local winners as well. So just in case you want to have a go at it, why not? Right, now let's go to Doe Famine Village and its owner, Pat Doherty. Morning, Pat.
Hello, Craig. How are you? Thanks for taking the call,
No, good to chat to you. And our previous conversations haven't been as potentially positive as this one, because it's reopened almost a year after a fire destroyed several buildings at the Heritage Attraction. And I remember speaking to you at that time, Pat, and, you know, I mean, you were optimistic, but things could often feel helpless just in the wake of such a tragedy. And here we are 1 year removed, and it's a much more positive picture.
Yes, it is. So after the fire, there were days when we honestly thought that was the end of it. So it was a kind of big blow to our family, but also all the work we put into it. We'd been at it that time for 27 years, and there were a lot of history lost and a lot of buildings destroyed. But then, you know, what happened then was, you know, yourselves, the community then stepped in and started showing their support, and that made the thinking a bit different then. So
Were you surprised by that, Pat? Because often, listen, I'm not comparing what happened there to a death, but sometimes you have to die to find out how much people like you or how important you were to them. Thankfully, though badly damaged, Doe Famine Village wasn't destroyed. Were you surprised at how important it was and how much love people in the community and the wider community had for it and what you and your family have been doing?
I was very surprised. No, never would think that way before that. And, you know, and because the stories we gathered up here were, some of them, a lot of them were taken from local people, and the visitors interested in stories. But it was a real surprise when the GoFundMe story started off, and then it went so far. That was a real surprise. And
so what's happened?
I don't think we'd really be at it this year.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd really be at it this year only for that, no, because we'd put so much of our life into it for the last 27 years, no, it was every day. And then you come to a full stop. And a week or two before that fire happened, I was in hospital in Letterkenny, so they believed I had a stroke at that time. So between the stroke and the fire, it made you think different.
Of course, yeah. And because so much went into it, it could have been easy to feel that, well, we can never build this back again, or that can never be replaced. But, you know, the human will is an amazing thing too. So what's happened over the course of the last year, Pat, in bringing the Doe Famine Village back to its former glory?
Well, what started off was, you know, David Leonard and Joan Crawford from Fatty Ireland, they came in and they did up a plan for it. And which helped and gave up a different way of thinking. But then, in between times then, different people and different communities came along and they offered different exhibits for it. So, for example, the Maguires from Convoy, who own Convoy House, as you go on there to the Gaelic Fields, towards there, you'll see as you go through the town, they offered parts, exhibits from their landlord's house, which one was a famine pot. And that created a whole new story, so we built a story around that part there. The Donegal County Council then allowed us to go into the library and get all the papers and the history of that. So it takes a wee things like that to make it happen. And then all different people, like the travelling community, they came in, and the Orange Order, we set another hall up for the Orange Order, and the Republican side too. So everybody wants to tell their own story, so we allow them to tell their own story. And I think you can't tell history unless you listen to each side.
Yeah, of course you can't. But I suppose in a way too, it was an opportunity to reset a little bit. Not that you had to or anything, but you know, you had a fresh palate, so to speak, and you were able to say, okay, what can we represent more, or what could be added here, or what could we do differently?
I definitely so. I've no attractions grow old, like ourselves, and there's a new generation out there who see things in a different way, and you know, they're used to social media, and the answer has to be very quick for them. No, they haven't time to sit and listen too long. So we've built a theatre now too, so part of our story telling is on a theatre, so it's on a stage, and we tell the story of the Poitchin making an initial, which was the capital of Ireland one time for Poitchin, and then the Irish Wake too, so the tours are all into that stuff. So and you know, the fear of being buried alive, that's the big thing for the wake, you know, sitting there hoping for the person to wake up.
Yeah.
And
sitting with them in case they do, yeah. And you know, if you go somewhere, and this is why it's so important that we never forget why people visit us in the first place. You want to learn about the people, you want to learn about the area. You know, you can get a major shop, an international brand anywhere in the world, but what makes us different, it's our story, it's our history, it's our culture, it's our traditions, and that's why your place is so popular. And I think a lot of times we can lose track of that, and we shouldn't. You talked about why you were able to have this conversation today, Pat, and a lot of it down to the great community support, but I want to go back a bit as well too, because the fire, and those watching the show are watching an aerial picture of it. It was down to the response of the emergency services too, wasn't it, that saved as much as was saved, so this rebuild back could actually happen?
I definitely was, and maybe what helped at the beginning was with a group on that day, a motorbike group from County Cavan, and they had just been there that day, and when the fire started, and it just happened that a lot of them were firemen. So these boys all came and dressed up in motorbike stuff, and but they were firemen, and they were able to deal with it and get everything prepared for the fire brigade, Donegal Fire Brigade, then to come. So when the fire brigade came, you know, everything was evacuated, and the pipes, everything was set and ready for them to start operating, putting out the fire. But only for that, the Donegal Fire Brigade, Carindona, Bulcrana, and Mavoe, more likely you wouldn't be here at all today, because the rest would have been burned down now. So say another 10 minutes would have changed everything.
Remarkable story. And do you know what? And I think I said this to you last year, Pat, and I'm going off my memory here, in that, you know, the Doe Famine Village is about history and remembering history and archiving certain moments in history. And I think I recall saying at that time that in a way, in time, this will actually become part of that history as well. The Great Fire of 25, or however it might be. You know what I mean? It's strange how, you know, life moves forward. We move on and you know, things that seem unimaginable at a time become part of the history, and an important part of it too.
I definitely so. And we have the boards telling the story of the fire here now, and the men had worked trying to clear it. The Dewey brothers and all their friends who came in, local men, came in trying to clear this, getting it prepared for what we're at now. So that story's there. A lot of people read it. You could see that yesterday, a lot of people reading that story about the fire. Mm-hmm. And that's just another part of our history. Every area, I think, can tell their own story. It doesn't matter if you go to Gador. People in Gador live different to the people down in Inishowen. And if you can keep it to the area you come from, that's a completely different story to, you know, people living in Letterkenny. We have all similarities, but different ways of surviving, though.
Oh, with this county is that you that we live completely different lives dependent on where you are. It's astonishing, really. From Ballyshannon to Aranmore to Mallon to Refo, it's like a country in and of itself, isn't it? Okay, and it's fascinating, and that's what makes us so fascinating. Pat, listen, it's great to have a more positive conversation with you, because obviously last year it was devastating, and it was astonishing, the response to it. And here's to hopefully a bumper 26.
Thanks so much, and thanks to Helen Radio for that.
Look after yourself,
so good
Pat.
Luck.
Thanks very much indeed. Pat Doherty, owner of Doe Famine Village, and a real story of persistence, resilience, community spirit, and bravery in the first instance as well. Are we going to do this? Fuel prices, $2.25 a litre. I presume that's diesel. Oh, my word, $2.25. I mean, like, that's massive. I mean, I was going to say a tenner, but those days are gone. You put 20 quid, 50 quid in, however what your usual weekly amount used to be. You know, you're going from, say, 1.75, which seemed expensive at a time, but now seems cheap, to 2.25. I mean, you're getting far less. On a lighter note, there was an influencer in England who was telling her followers, it happened to be a woman, that 20 quid's worth of petrol is still 20 quid's worth of petrol, because that's how much you put in and that's how much you got, and that we shouldn't be worrying too much about it, that 20 pounds of petrol still 20 pounds of petrol. I don't think anyone told her about checking the litres, but anyway. Hi, Greg. We were in Letterkenny yesterday and the petrol station was showing 204.9 incoming, but when we were at the pump, we noticed the other side of the sign was 209.9. We mentioned it to the staff, but they were uninterested and didn't know anything about it. Very unfair to falsely advertise price. Well, what did you pay at the pump, though? Did you pay 204.9 or 209.9? That's the critical part of that story, I suppose. Greg, can the bus companies not claim the VAT back on everything they buy? No, it's the companies are not VAT registered that provide that service. I'll dig into why it is, but no, they can't. And you have to be a certain type of a company, or the company has to be structured in a certain type of way to tender. That's what I was trying to tease out in the earlier conversation, but didn't get quite to the point. No, they can't. They can't, actually. Can you say a big thank you to everyone who supported our coffee morning in Glenvar Old School yesterday in aid of small animal welfare? It was a great success. Many thanks for your support. No problem. Right, this is a caller's question. Maybe you can help. For a young couple getting married in a Catholic chapel in Ireland, taking on the sacrament of marriage, how much do they have to pay the Catholic chapel overall? What? That's a good question, you know. So what are the chapel providing? Are you doing the choir separate? I mean, obviously, people would compensate the priest for his time. And then, of course, if there are altar boys or girls, normally they would get a little thank you. So I don't know what is there a standard? Is it 250, 200? I don't know. There are people who will text in and say, look, you know, I go there every week and it's you know, it's not a hotel. I'm entitled to it or what have you. That's fine. But there are those. Listen, you got married recently. What's the standard that you give the chapel? Help me out to help this couple. And how exciting for you to be getting married. I'm sure it's all very exciting. At St. Patrick's Day parade in Ballinrobe, had a float that referred referenced the Jeffrey Epstein files, including a bed set up, including Prince Andrew and others. There were signs on it that read, Prince Andrew's going to jail. Is that an appropriate float to include in a parade that's heavily attended to by young children? I mean... I think things like this are like watching The Simpsons, right? You know, some stuff goes over kids' heads, and that's the way it should be. And, you know, I think that's... We can't lose the run of ourselves either. It's humour. I saw some humorous floats yesterday. You know, they don't always land, but sometimes they do. And if you're a 4 or 5 year old, it should just go over your head. I mean, or even if you're 8 or 9, it should go over your head unless you're thinking way beyond your years. So I would say it's akin to like watching The Simpsons, whereby it's family friendly, but now and again, there's a joke in there for mum and dad. So that would be my reaction to it. I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Now, hi, can you please tell people to be careful coming into Glenealy from Maville and Carndonagh, that there are traffic lights right on both corners? Yes, they have a sign, but the big problem is so many signs are left up, very few take heed. There's been a few close calls this morning. Yeah, I think we all have been in that position where you pull up at a set of temporary traffic lights and you're concerned if people coming around a corner could see you. On the issue of President Connolly, I'm ashamed to call Catherine Connolly our president after her speech on our patron saint. She never acknowledged St. Patrick as a saint. She's afraid to offend other religious groups, and even President Trump wore a beautiful green tie in respect for St. Patrick. The president referring to the patron saint simply as Patrick 4 times in her address was the height of disrespectful to our faith, a country she is president of. She should be called upon to apologise to her country for her disrespect. So I'm not sure if people who were offended by that are most motivated to text in, or if that's a sense of the outrage out there. If there's balance to be had, let me know. 086 60 25,000. Now, Evelyn McGlynn of Evelyn McMarketing is in studio with me. Good morning to you, Evelyn.
Good morning, Greg.
And we also have with us Martin McColl, solar technician, sales with Efficient Renewables, or Renewals, I should say. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
All right, okay, Evelyn. This is part of a one-day event that's upcoming, this conversation. So what is happening?
Sure. So Inisho and Co-op obviously do this every year, very much as a community event, as much as commercial. And it's really about bringing Inisho and Co-op suppliers, their community partners, and bringing the community together just for everything, really, from community knowledge through to whether you're building a home, retrofitting, and just really it's a fantastic day for all the family. This is our 5th year to do it. And, you know, there's a great sense of community, as I say, with Inisho and Co-op being a co-op. Mm. It's much more than just an information day. It is a great sense of people coming together.
Yeah, because a lot of people might have an idea that they want to do something. And I think, too, you know, when we see the increased costs of heating a home, but it's also about retaining that heat, etc., it makes people even more inclined to think, but where do you begin? Right. So a day like this is a good start point, isn't it?
Exactly. So, I mean, so many of us research, obviously, online for so many things now, and listening to Highland Radio and listening to whatever. But there's nothing better than when you have a group of people, a group of experts, a group of knowledgeable people, and people interested in giving you the answers. And that's really what we find on a day like this, is that everybody is there together. And we have this year we have from first step to finish home. So we have mortgage advice. We have Shane Doherty Architecture is going to be there with the virtual reality, so you can literally walk through your future home. We have Efficient Renewals, obviously, who are the experts on all things heat. We love that. And then, of course, we have Claire Irwin, who's going to be there, and Claire is going to talk about all the SEAI grants and supports. And, you know, it'll sort of cover grant timelines, paperwork, and how to fill out your application forms. So, you know, apart from all the exhibitors who are going to be there, we have these expert talks. Mm. And we have a number of things for our community as well. Any trade people who maybe don't have the time to do the exhibition or whatever, we have a community trade table. So we're asking people, you know, in the area and in the region, if they want to leave their flyers or their business cards. And, you know, again, we want to include everybody in this, whether they can make it on the day or not.
Martin, in terms of solar energy, I think we've sort of moved past the early adopter stage now at this stage, because, you know, everywhere you look, there's solar panels on roofs or in gardens and what have you, and every single one of those is an advertising sign, really, effectively. There's still work to be done, but this is not sort of new technology now. I know it's always evolving, but you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg, get where you come from. Look, yeah, as you say, sure, everybody knows now somebody that has solar if they don't have it already. And, like, the word spreads alone from that, like, I mean, as well as advertising and stuff. Like, but your point is right. Like, I mean, it's one of these things that it does, it says what it says on the can, you know, once you put solar up, it actually, you know, for instance, it reduces your bills. You produce your own electricity. And, you know, at the market we live in at the moment, like, I mean, we're so vulnerable, like, with the energy costs and whatnot. You know, you can control that by having your own solar. I mean, and then that leads on then to, obviously, like, the heat pumps and everything. Now with the retrofitting and micro houses and everything, you know, the way forward with heating, because everything is electrically, and even now the cars, your transport and everything is going to be electric coming in the future.
Just focusing on the solar side of things for a moment, how advanced are we in capturing energy? You know, because going back, you know, decades and even more recently, people might say, oh, well, the sun never shines here, right? So things have moved on really quite significantly in terms of how we capture that energy from the sun.
Yeah, look, you know, Donegal, people think Donegal is one of the worst areas in Ireland for solar, but it's actually not. It's actually nearly one of the better ones, really, because, okay, the winter we can do nothing about it with the short days, but once you generate that electricity, battery storage is massive as well. I mean, because if you can save that energy and use it for later on, I mean, because people put up systems that's able to run their home during the day, but also have the export, which, you know, they're selling back to the grid. And that's okay at the moment, but like I do feel people should focus more on saving that energy.
Yeah, I don't. If I were going down this route, I wouldn't be too bothered about feeding back into the network,
no.
Because I think that's something that's going to shut off really quite
very
soon.
Shortly,
to be
very shortly, yeah,
I would be focused more on, you know, where can I save money?
Yeah.
Is what percentage of people now going solar are getting batteries at the same time?
Oh. Nearly every system we sell has a battery.
Mm,
nearly every system we sell.
No point wasting it.
And now with the AI market coming on, I mean, this dynamic pricing is just going to make the whole battery experience even better for people.
For sure. Listen, you know, the batteries are great at the moment, but I'm excited about these solid-state batteries that are coming down the line and the amount of energy they might store, which can always be upgraded down the line. The solar panels are the important part of it here. Right, so Evelyn, in terms of the day itself, it's a lot of stuff packed in, right? So you want people to go in the door and be able to absorb lots of info, which is good. But it's also about sparking ideas, isn't it, and problem solving. There's going to be a lot of people there that maybe are going to be rebuilding. They don't want to be rebuilding, but because of the defective concrete block crisis, they will be. They might want to say, is there different ways to do this? You know, because they haven't built a house for 10, 15 years. You know what I mean? And things have advanced.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, for example, in a Shone Development Partnership, we're going to be there with their facilitators talking to people who have concerns about defective block issues or things. And that's the overall thing. You know, we have timber frame, we have roofing, we have windows, flooring. You know, windows, obviously, there's new grants coming in for that now as well. So we'll have information on that.
The real stuff is people will be spending ages thinking about, should I go triple glazed or double glazed?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And there are different views on it, and it depends on the house, and depends on its location, depends which way it's facing. You know, like, it would be nice to get some advice on, if you're rebuilding or building, do we go double or triple? Is it worth the extra few grand or not?
Exactly. And that is the thing. On a day like this, that you go, and, you know, obviously we would advise that people have a conversation before they go, what do they really want to see?
No. I'm going in.
Right,
a blank canvas.
And there's free tea and coffee for everybody there as well that comes along in the day.
How dare you imply we should prepare? No, that's what the hub's for.
Okay, all right. Greg says no preparing.
No,
but
I know.
Really, you should.
I do know exactly what you mean. Have some questions. I mean, I think people who have arrived at the questions that they'll want the answers to, but to have them noted, I think it's good advice.
Yeah.
Martin, what else do you do with Efficient Renewables? That's the name of the company, isn't it?
Yeah, Efficient Renewables. Look,
it is Renewables.
It's
written down as Renewables, and I corrected myself.
Right. So, I mainly look after the solar, but look, our two main focuses is the solar market domestically and commercially, but also, like, obviously the heat pumps is a massive chunk for us as well. Like, I mean, air to water and geothermal. Now, we'll always promote the geothermal over the air to water because there's lots of benefits, which we can talk people through that, I mean, on the day, I mean, as well.
I think the biggest concern with heat pumps is the cost of running them.
Again, this is a wee bit of a... what would you say, like a notion in some people's head, because, you know, if your house is capable, you know, of retaining the heat, this is the factor. As long as you prepare the house, you'll keep the heat, and the heating cost won't be relevant as much. The big mistake, and we've seen it across Ireland, And even lately, like, which is, I don't understand nowadays how even the council can do these things. Like, I mean, is that they put in heat pumps into houses that's not compatible.
Yes, it's in and of itself, it's not as efficient as the house has to be prepared and suitable for it. But that's honest advice, though, Martin. You know,
well,
I mean,
that's it.
Do you go to the hub and you say, someone says to you, well, my house is graded at D or whatever it might be. And you say, well, listen, you're going to have to get that somewhere else for it to make sense. And that's what, speaking to experts, because there's no cloak and...
There's no cloak and dagger. You just have to be honest with people. And as long as people understand that, they know when going away. And to be honest, like, the house is built in the last 10, 15 years.
They're very close.
So they don't need much, you know, upgrading to do.
Exactly. And there are still supports for people in relation to that. Right, what else is there, Evelyn, that we haven't discussed?
Well, two things that we have this year. Well, we always have a brilliant draw. So this year at the event, we have prizes for €300 crown vouchers, paint vouchers, wooden flooring and Inisho and Co-op vouchers. So that's nice as well, a little bit add-on.
Brilliant.
There's a cup of tea and coffee and a bicky for everybody. So it's real community again, sit and have a chat. And we also have a large power tool display this year from DIY right through to trade. So we've got DeWalt, Einhell, Makita, Milwaukee. So anybody that's
don't
really...
Don't want to be sexist, but I can just see the 50 guys standing around salivating over that.
No, exactly. Absolutely. So, I mean, again, we sort of spoke to people last year and said, what would you like? And somebody said, yeah, power tools would be really good, big display. So we've got a power tool display. So look, listen, we want everybody to come along, come early. It runs from 11 to 4. The talks are on from about 12:30 to 2. There's loads of time and opportunity to talk to all our brilliant expert speakers and all of the stands. You know, there's something there for everybody.
Yeah, go along. If you haven't been to something like that, you might wonder, what the hell are you talking about? Because, you know, if you haven't been into a room where this set up, but just go. It's very friendly. And it's designed to make your experience as enjoyable and engaging as possible. That's why Martin's there. That's why Evelyn's there. That's why everybody else is there. It's very welcoming. You walk in, you know, you can engage as much or as little as you like. You can see stuff.
And if you can't make it on the day, Inisho and Co-op are there. You know, we're the largest supplier or the largest employer in retail in the Inisho region. And we have everything that you need to build your home. So, you know, come and talk to us as well with your plans if you can't make it on the day.
And equally, if you want any questions answered, I'm sure you can get in touch with Efficient Renewables to determine what's best for you. Right, Martin McCall, good luck. It's on Saturday, March 21st.
This Saturday,
we can't do next and this.
All right, okay. Saturday 21st, right? Perfect. Yep.
Is that this Saturday?
This Saturday.
Or next Saturday?
This Saturday. This Saturday coming.
Hey, listen.
Three days away.
It's this or next, whichever you prefer, but it is this. Saturday, March 21st. It's at the beautiful setting of the Inishowen Gateway Hotel Buncrana. Loads of parking and a great setting, as I mentioned. And it's from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So not too early a start and certainly not too late a finish.
Yep.
And practical advice, expert talks, loads of power tools and access to the people who supply this stuff. So, and as Evelyn said earlier on too, think about it between now and then. What questions in your build or your renovation or your retrofit do you want answered? Because the people will be there to do it.
Perfect.
Right, okay, let's get to some of your comments now. And we'll start with the cost of living. A caller says, I do agree with that lady on Ireland and how expensive it is. We are blessed as a family with good jobs and live a fairly comfortable life. We love nothing more than the five of us going out for a meal on a Sunday now and then. The cost has skyrocketed so much in 6 months that we no longer can afford this, nor, and this is the important part, justify it. I do not blame the restaurants. So how can families who are struggling for the basics manage to cope with rising costs? Well, every time edges up, it drags more people into the point of not being able to afford it. That is the problem that we face. So whether it's food prices going up and thankfully, there's lots of families out there that have a window to absorb it. But every time, like that petrol and diesel increase, the home heating oil increase, there is hundreds of individuals or families that now they can't get the home heating oil, or instead of getting 500 litres, if they were lucky enough to get that in the past, they're having to get 200 litres or something, or 250 litres, and then start thinking about how they use their heat. You know, when sitting in a cold house, effectively, that's the reality of it. And it's very hard on a program like this to relate that. But I know it because people contact me all the time. you know, anyone can find themselves in that situation, even if you don't think it applies to them. On the issue of rubbish. I'm out walking most mornings. I've noticed the great effort that has been made to clean up the town. Presumably this is Letterkenny, especially side lanes and car parks. I'm not sure if it's the council, CE scheme or another party, but I wanted to acknowledge the work that has been done and to say thank you to the people who put the time and effort into the areas in Letterkenny. It's very much acknowledged and appreciated. Unfortunately, on Tuesday morning, I was out walking again and noticed a pizza box thrown on the ground in the lane at the boxing club. The council have placed more bins around the town and there's also a bin outside takeaways. I proceeded on, and as I came to the child benefit office on Oliver Plunkett Street to the back of the courtyard, there were pizza boxes, burger boxes, bottles of water, empty Smirnoff ice bottles, empty vape packets dumped on the ground. If you can walk to the bar, carry out and buy alcohol, walk to the takeaway, etc. to buy food, you can definitely walk to a bin. It's a huge insult to the people who took the time and put in the effort to tidy the town. Absolutely disgusting and insulting behaviour, Anonymous. Yeah, I presume it's the Tidy Towns. They do amazing work, not just in Letterkenny, but all across our region. The problem of the people that dump this stuff, it's how you get through to them. They're a minority and they don't care about us. They don't care about the community. They don't care about the efforts of others. They probably don't care about themselves, if the truth be told. How do you get through to someone that will eat a pizza and just sling the box? I was walking or driving down from here a couple of days ago and there's two young lads, probably about 12 or 13, and one of them finished a bag of crisps and just took the bag and chucked it into the hedgerow. And I'm thinking, you know, no one had a conversation with this guy to say you can't really do that. It could be your granddad that's out tomorrow morning with a pair of pickers trying to clean up your town. But anyway, any insights or any comments in relation to that, let us know. Okay, I'm going to be back talking cooking after these. Right, let's move on to our next guest, Orla Drumgool, author of the Irish Mammy Cookbook. Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg. No pajamas for a radio interview this morning.
No, well, I can only go by the top.
No, fully dressed. No, fully dressed.
I've no doubt. Right, how excited are you to get your first book published?
It's wild. I mean, it's kind of the culmination of, I suppose, a dream that maybe I didn't even realise I had. I taught English for, I don't know how many years, I taught English for 35 years. So I've been persuading students to be creative and do their own thing for all that time. So it's kind of nice that it's my turn to do it.
Yeah, and sort of maybe a more traditional way of getting your message out there follows a more modern way because, you know, you've proven very popular on social media. And that only happens if with authenticity. You know, you have to be giving your audience something. They don't just, you know, log on to you regularly for no reason at all.
Yeah, and I suppose it kind of comes from teaching, Greg. So it's easier in some senses for bloggers to be teachers first and bloggers after, because the way I blog is kind of the way I taught all that time. So you're just kind of chatting to people. And I suppose COVID helped because there you are in a classroom on a video and you have blank screens in front of you, so you don't know whether anybody's hearing you or not. So that has kind of worked very well for me, I suppose.
And you've mentioned teaching a couple of times. You are not a trained cook as such. I don't want you to do a disservice, but you are primarily or exclusively self-taught. It's like, this is the real deal. This is Irish Mammy cooking.
Absolutely. I mean, people assume, lots of people have said, oh my God, I wish you had been my home ec teacher. I wasn't a home ec teacher. I was a music and English teacher, Greg. And so literally it is home taught. And it is just from experimenting and playing with things. And I suppose all of those television programs over the years that I would have watched, you know, like Ready, Steady, Cook, where you have 20 minutes to do your, you know, you're kind of just handed a weird set of ingredients. So I've always loved watching TV cookery shows. And then I kind of like showing people how to do things in an easy manner.
Yes. And this is not casting any shade. We've a lot of these books are, I suppose, produced for people at different stages. Sometimes when I pick up a cookbook, and it's an ingredient I've never heard of, nor I wouldn't know where to source. Or perhaps more importantly, I can't justify the expense for maybe trying it in one dish. Do you try as best you can to have a situation where most people will have or easy access to the ingredients in your dishes?
Absolutely. I mean, we all have garlic, but I use smoked paprika. And if I use smoked paprika in one thing, I'll use it in four or five different things.
Well, have that. That's so, okay. I have smoked paprika.
There you go. Okay. And you know something? It's a most underrated little spice. I use vanilla extract in loads of different things. If you haven't got it, I show you how to make it. So yeah, I like the idea of being able to just look in the cupboard and say, God, I have coconut milk and I have a bit of curry. I have some mangoes there that are going off. What can I do with them? And that's where a lot of the recipes come from. Just making things up as I go along.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, this will be, a lot of this stuff will be familiar to Irish mammies, you know, maybe sort of even Irish mammies of the past, if you know what I mean. Because sometimes, I was actually talking to a colleague a little earlier on about me trying to do more with my time, because we can, I sometimes don't think we're quite as busy as we think we are. Right, you know, so I go, oh, I'm too busy, I can't do that. But possibly I'm not that busy. Possibly it's actually, I'm just using that as an excuse. We can spend more time preparing food or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. But I also think you don't have to spend all day doing things. So, for example, yesterday I spent an hour in the kitchen. But in that hour in the kitchen, I made shin soup and I made enough for 4 days' dinner. And I also made Irish stew because people have asked me to do an Irish stew recipe. I don't like Irish stew, I'll be honest. I'm not a stew person, but people wanted me to make a recipe, and so I did. But that was an hour, and so I had dinner for 5 days, do you know? So I think, yeah, you kind of manage your time a bit better, and I think we're all
that's
online
it. That's what I was trying to say. It's about managing that time you have.
Well, that's it, exactly.
Yeah, and it's very clear writing, very well illustrated, and the pictures feel very real and authentic as well too, if that makes sense. Sometimes, you know, the pictures can look unachievable. I don't know.
Well, that's it. And in fairness, I will say, and I mean, I'm looking at it here and it's on the page in front of you. That is not what my apple tart looks like, Greg, I'll be honest. But the girls did a beautiful photograph of it, and I said, oh, it doesn't look like my apple tart. But it's only because they put egg wash on it and they put it in a round container, and I normally make it in a
square,
in a rectangular tin. But honestly, things in the book are real because they are exactly, I mean, they took my recipes, they tried them, and they said, oh yeah, that worked and it looks nice and homely. And it's meant to be homely. Yeah. It's not meant to be fancy haute cuisine at all.
Yes, but even things like how you make a nice homemade burger, be it a chicken burger or a beef burger or whatever it might be, you know, that's not a skill set everyone has. But my word, there's some difference in the taste of something like that cooked freshly at home versus defrosted or bought in. And that's the whole
idea
of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the idea. But also, to be fair, Mom was a working mother all her life and we ate from the freezer always. I mean, I have three freezers here because I make things and then you're running, you're doing something, you don't have time. It's very handy. So things like the burgers that you make, you can either cook them all and then freeze, or you can leave them raw and take them straight from the freezer.
Oh, that was a game changer for us because, you know, it was stuff being thrown out. Or you didn't realise you were going to throw it out, but freezing is fantastic. But do you know the thing that was a game changer for me in terms of freezing stuff was learning how to defrost it. Freezing it was easy. But learning how to defrost it and when to defrost it, that was the game changer for me.
Absolutely. And also how to freeze it so that you're not just throwing everything in a big lump, that you use your parchment sheets. So, I mean, you know, and you kind of assume everybody knows these things, Greg, but from the blogging, actually, there are lots of things that people have forgotten. And there was a whole generation kind of in the 70s, 80s, 90s where, you know, instant food was fantastic. I was telling somebody recently, all I ever wanted as a child was Smash. I just wanted Mammy to buy a Smash once. And actually, as an adult, I bought it once because Mam had never bought it for us. And I thought, oh my God, that's what I was missing. Yeah. You know?
I had the same experience with Angel Delight. I always thought that this was...
I do like Angel Delight.
I know, but I always just thought it was this thing because we never had Angel. And anyway, you just triggered a memory there really effectively. And it just wasn't quite what I anticipated.
And
it to
that's...
be.
That is the purpose of the book, and I hope that's what it's doing for people, that it is triggering memories and making them go, oh, Do you know what we used to make? I must try that. Mm. And I suppose that's what it's all about for me.
Yeah. And the nostalgia. And also, it's one of the first books, if not the first book, where it's achievable from cover to cover, which I think is a testament to you and I suppose understanding your audience. You will know The Irish Mammy on socials. Now you can get the physical book into your hands, and you can't beat that. It's 100 recipes that taste of home. Orla, the very best of luck, and obviously the standard question, where can people get the book?
So it's available in all good bookshops, but it is selling out fast apparently, so they're on a reprint at the moment. So wow. If it's not available right now, it will be available by the end of the month.
And it's a few crappy bookstores it's in as well. Not just all
it's
the good
ones. It's in all those bookstores, all the bookstores.
They're all fantastic. and it's great to see them doing so well. Shop local if you can in your local great bookstore.
Exactly what I say.
All right, look after yourself, Orla. Thank you very much indeed. That is Orla Drumgool there. Right, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day.